What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Friday, April 18th. It is the day in which the last play-in games will take place, so we will know who the eight seeds are by the end of the night, and the day before the playoffs officially kick off with four game ones happening tomorrow, which, of course, I cannot wait for. So, today's pod, we're going to just talk about each of the first round series. I'm going to give, you know, previews, just kind of talk through where my head goes with each series, what are some of the things that stand out to me that could decide it, and then at the end I will make my pick for each series, and then I'll make my finals pick as well. But with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. So I'm going to go through every playoff series in the first round, preview it a little bit, and then make my prediction for who I think will win and why. I'm not going to, you know, predict the entire playoffs, go round by round, just because, you know, as those rounds come, I will do the same thing with previews and predictions, but I will wrap up today's podcast with a finals prediction at the very least, as well as who I think will win the NBA championship. So I'm going to start in the West just because I think there's more interesting series in the West than there is in the East. And I'm just going to go, you know, seed by seed, starting with the one seed in their series and down the line. So the one seed, the Oklahoma City Thunder, will be facing off against either the Memphis Grizzlies or Dallas Mavericks. That game is still yet to be determined. Tonight are the two final play-in games in which the Memphis and Dallas will face off. And the winner has a date with one of the greatest regular season teams of all time. So the point is, I don't really think it matters who wins this game for Oklahoma City's sake. I think that, you know, this is probably going to be a quick series regardless. I've spoken ad nauseum about, you know, the Thunder and the fact that, you know, they went 68-14. They were 16 games up on the number two seed. They had the fifth best record in NBA history. They had the second best net rating in the regular season of all time at plus 12.8. And if you look at the top five net ratings all time, all of them won the NBA championship. Eight of the top nine have won the championship. 10 of the top 12 have won the championship. The point is, Oklahoma City is leaps and bounds better than both of these teams, especially in their current state. Memphis's struggles as of late are very well documented at this point. You know, they started 35-16. They've since gone 13-19. They fell all the way from the two seed down to the eight seed. Now they are looking at potentially missing the playoffs altogether. We know they fired their coach. They have just struggled mightily. And even if they do win this game, I just don't see a scenario in which they are overly competitive. I mean, John Morant is questionable, I think, for the game tonight. He may not even play. If he doesn't play in the play-in game, I could totally see them just losing and missing the playoffs altogether. And I wish you could say, oh, you know, bad luck that Ja, you know, isn't healthy for the play-in and they would have made it if he was. Well, you know, he's only played about 50 games this whole season anyway. And the longest streak of consecutive games he's played all season was six. He's only played more than five once. So to say that it's a surprise that he's hurt would be disingenuous. And also, if you think about, like, the only way Memphis could even potentially win this series is if it's a long series. You know, they're not going to sweep Oklahoma City, so it's probably going six or seven. And if it goes seven games, that would require John Morant to play seven consecutive games, which is something he has not done this entire season. So consider me, you know, skeptical that he'd be able to make it even through a series, just given the nagging injuries that he's had. And, you know, his style of play has been talked about as being maybe a little bit more conducive to injuries and a little more dangerous, just because he can be reckless driving to the basket a little bit. But, you know, he's at his best driving to the basket, so it's kind of hard to ask him not to do that. But I'd have other questions about Memphis regardless. You know, Zach Edey was quite a mixed bag against Golden State in the play-in game, and I think that his play would probably be put quite under a microscope against Oklahoma City, just because I think that they're going to attack him, and there's not much of a counter that Memphis has. You know, with Brandon Clark out for the year, they could put Jaren Jackson at the five, but, you know, he has struggled as a rebounder, and he's been better next to another big throughout his career. And so I just don't think they have a lot of options outside of ED, but I think ED could get exposed, particularly, you know, getting attacked by smaller guards on the defensive end of the court. And then he was missing bunny after bunny offensively. And I don't know if he's ready for the intensity of a tough playoff series, especially against a Thunder team that was one of the best defensive teams in NBA history. So not to mention that, you know, with Jalen Wells out for the year, the Grizzlies really are hurting in terms of perimeter defense and a point of attack defender, which they just don't really have. I have no idea what their plan for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be in this series. And so, you know, the point is Memphis, even if they win this game tonight, I think they are just walking dead into that series, and I don't think they have much of a chance. And so on the Dallas side of things, if they are to win this, it would, first of all, be kind of funny that they even made the playoffs, just given their whole, you know, the season that they've had and with the Luka trade and then Kyrie being out for the year. But I will say, you know, this version of Dallas, if Kyrie was healthy, they'd be pretty interesting. You know, I do. The roster is still pretty good overall. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They should not have traded Luka Doncic, and that they are worse than they were when they had him. But it's not a terrible roster. But as currently constructed, it is extremely unbalanced to the point where I don't think that they could be competitive in a series. You know, they have Najee Marshall starting at point guard, and he is not a point guard by any means. And so their best reliable ball handler is probably Spencer Dinwiddie. Not sure he is somebody you want to be giving big minutes to, and they haven't been giving big minutes to him. And so it's really a by committee approach in terms of ball handling, playmaking, initiating. And a lot of that is falling on Anthony Davis. And I'm not saying he can't do a lot of those things, but to me, Anthony Davis is an all-time elite level finishing player. You know, he is at his best when other players are getting him the ball in his spot. And that is where he's truly dominant as an offensive player. But he's not always the best at, you know, getting himself into his spot, which is what he's had to do a lot of. And that tends to lead to him taking a lot of, you know, mid-range jump shots, which he can make. But if you're a defense, that is something you are not only living with, but excited about, especially over the span of a 4-7 game series. So I just do not see Dallas having the offensive juice without any sort of reliable initiator, any sort of reliable ball handler. I don't think this sort of by committee approach is sustainable going into a postseason. And so could AD maybe have one monster game and win a game for them? Sure. Could John Morant, Jaren Jackson, and Desmond Bane have a really good game once and win a game? Probably. But ultimately, I just think the Thunder are that good. I think their defense is that elite that they're going to shut these teams down. I think Dallas would really struggle to score against them. I think Memphis is really going to struggle to stop the Thunder. And so with that, I'm going to pick Thunder in four, regardless of the opponent, just because, you know, I just think these teams are not even close to the level that Oklahoma City is at, especially if John Morant is out on the Memphis side of things. But moving to the next series, the Rockets and Warriors. And this should be a really fun and exciting series. And it's kind of funny that, you know, the last time the Rockets were good and in the playoffs, they were seeing the Warriors time and time again. And it felt like every single year that was the team they couldn't get over the hump against. And they went through an entire rebuild. And here they are again playing the Warriors and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Steve Kerr. And so, I mean, credit to Golden State for that sort of longevity. But, you know, these teams have both been trending up over the last few months, if you will. I mean, the Warriors, well documented, they were 25-26 before the Butler trade. They've gone 25-7 since. They are 23-5 overall with Steph and Jimmy both in the lineup. The Rockets, they get off to a hot start, 32-14. They had a little rough stretch of 5-11, but they finished after that 15-2. They did lose their last three games, but they were sitting some starters in that, so I wouldn't put too much into that. But overall, you know, teams that have been trending up across the board. But there are a lot of storylines in this one because it's really a battle of two different styles, a battle of two different, you know, places of where these teams are. You know, Houston, this is their first go around. They're an up-and-coming young team. The Warriors have been there, done that, built around veterans. And so it could go a lot of different ways, but there are a lot of questions on both sides in terms of how will this series play out. And one series that this actually kind of reminds me of is the 2022 finals, when the Warriors did prevail and get their fourth championship with this core. But they were going up against the Celtics, who were a young team with a very elite defense led by Ime Udoka as their coach that had some potential, you know, half court offensive questions. And I think Houston fits a lot of that bill. And of course, it's not fair because Houston does not have a Jason Tatum or anyone even comparable to him. But the point is, it'll be, I think it'll play out as sort of a similar series to that. And so it reminds me of how that series is, where it was very back and forth. You know, Boston stole game one in Golden State, and then Golden State punched back, but Boston, you know, they were up 2-1 in the series at one point. But I think Houston, you know, they've got a lot of the personnel to be able to pull this off. I mean, even though they don't necessarily have the star player, I mean, we saw a couple weeks ago that when Steph Curry played Houston last, he was 1-for-10 from the field, only 3 points, 4 turnovers, more turnovers than points. Obviously not a great game for Steph, and he was primarily being guarded by Amen Thompson, who did a spectacular job on him. And so that's the thing. It's not just Amen. They have Tari Eason. They have Dylan Brooks, who they can throw at Jimmy Butler. They have a lot of just perimeter defenders. Fred VanVleet even has done a really good job on Steph in the past, back when they played in the finals back in 2019. He was oftentimes the main defender on him. So they have a lot of bodies to throw at Steph and Jimmy. And so I think Steph, you know, he's good enough where he's going to be able to work through it and have some good games, but I wouldn't be surprised if he had some games where he struggled too, which is what makes Jimmy Butler so important to me in this series. And the question will be, can he be playoff Jimmy? You know, in the play-in game, he looked like it. 38 points on 12 of 20 shooting. Got to the line, I think, 18 times it was. 2-for-4 from three. He was spectacular, especially to start that game. But, I mean, they don't win that game without him being at an all-NBA level throughout it. But the thing is, he's been really, really passive, not only since he got to the Warriors, but really all season long. He had the fewest field goal attempts per game this season since 2014, which was his third year, is before he won Most Improved Player. So, you know, really before Jimmy was even Jimmy. And so he's been really, really not aggressive, especially since getting the Warriors. He's been just trying to fit in. But I don't know if that approach is going to be good enough to win the series if he's not more assertive. In 30 games of Golden State, he's only taken greater than 15 field goal attempts 4 times. And if you look at when he's had success in the postseason, in 2022, when they made the conference finals, and then 2023, when they made the finals, he averaged 19 field goal attempts in 22 and 20 field goal attempts in 2023. And he was averaging 27 a game, you know. So, and those teams, if he takes 3 less shots a game and is down to 23, 24 points, they do not make those runs. Like, that, it's just not happening. They didn't really have the talent around him to propel that team unless he was spectacular, and he was spectacular. And so that's the thing. Will he be that version of himself? If he is, then I think they have a really good shot to not only beat Houston, but be competitive in a round 2, regardless of who they play, and have a chance to make the conference finals. But if he is his passive, you know, like just fitting in the flow of the game, not really being assertive type Jimmy, then I think that they might struggle, because it's going to be a lot on Steph, and Steph is going to have some really tough defensive assignments on him. And then where do they go from there? If Pajemski's making shots, if Moody's making shots, then sure, they might be able to still prevail in some of these games. But those guys have been inconsistent, and I mean, they're just not at the level where you can kind of count on them for 15 points a game or anything like that. And so when those guys aren't on, then it's going to be really tough for them to score against this Houston defense. And then that's not even to mention the size advantage here. I mean, the Warriors have been playing really full-time small ball. Looney plays in stints. Quentin Post plays in stints. But Draymond is essentially their full-time five right now. And the Rockets are very big. You know, Şengün is a big, bulky center down there. They play Steven Adams behind him. But they've even been rolling out a two-big lineup where those guys are playing together. And it's been actually quite effective. They're, you know, an all-time good rebounding team, especially on the offensive glass. And so if they just completely dominate the boards, which it's very possible that they do, then it's going to be really tough for Golden State. They're going to have to make up on the margins elsewhere. They're going to have to really outshoot Houston. They're going to have to really take care of the ball. They're going to have to play really good defense, even when Houston's getting 2 or 3 shots on a possession. So they're going to have to play really almost flawlessly if Houston is going to completely dominate the boards, because then it's just a math game of you get 15 more shots in a game. It's pretty hard not to win at that point unless you're having a really bad shooting night or the other team is going crazy. So we will see how that plays out. I suspect that, you know, it'll be a situation where who flinches first. Golden State's going to try to play their bigs off the court, I'm sure, even though they're not really like an isolation heavy team. They still are a team that, you know, can take advantage of that with their spacing. And then Houston's going to try to leave the bigs out there as long as they can and make Golden State counter. And so I'm sure we will see a little bit of both. But the big reason that I have kind of doubts about Houston, which if you've listened to my podcast, you know I've been kind of not very bullish on them come playoff time despite their successful regular season. Number one is that the Rockets, their late game half-court offensive execution, I'm not sure it's going to be up to snuff for a playoff team that beats a really good team in Golden State. They're only 22nd ranked in half-court offense on the season. They had a 107 offensive rating in the clutch this season, which would rank them 29th in the league over a full year. Only the Wizards would have been worse if you extrapolate that over a full season. So they were not good in the half court, especially not late in games. And, you know, their top perimeter scorers, Fred VanVleet shoots 38% from the field. Jalen Green shoots 42% from the field. Dylan Brooks shoots 43% from the field. I know they like to run a lot of stuff through Şengün, but it feels like late in games, they tend to go away from him. And then, you know, Amen Thompson has been great, especially down the stretch of the second half. But it's a lot to ask out of him to, you know, have the Steph Curry assignment and then also be this supposed go-to scorer. And I just don't think he's polished enough to take on that role quite yet. I think he's still got some development to do on the offensive end. And so they're going to be relying a lot on some really inefficient guards that haven't shown and proven that they can lead a team in this setting. And so that, when you look at the other end of the court, where you've got Jimmy Butler and Steph Curry, two guys that have led their teams to the finals as the clear-cut, undisputed number one options and done it efficiently, looked elite doing so, it's quite a big discrepancy there. And so I think that that's a big advantage for Golden State in this series. And then lastly, the experience stuff. You know, I've talked about this with teams in the past, Oklahoma City last year. I've talked about it with Houston all season this year. And they haven't taken their playoff losses yet. You know, they had a phenomenal season, 52 wins. They were the 2 seed, one of the best teams in the league all season long. But again, if you look at this roster, their top 8 guys in minutes played, Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, Amen Thompson, Jabari Parker, Tari Eason, Cam Whitmore, those guys have combined 0 playoff minutes, not a single minute for 6 of their top 8 guys. And then even if you look at the other two, I mean, Dylan Brooks has been to the playoffs, but only 22 games, and he's only won one playoff series in his whole career. And then you go to Fred VanVleet, you know, he did win a championship, 52 games played in the postseason at this point, but only 16 as a starter. You know, the majority of those, he was a reserve for Toronto. And so it's just, even the guys with experience have varying levels of experience, and they just have so many guys that have not been there. And so that always opens the question of how will their games translate? Will Jalen Green be efficient enough to be a go-to scorer on a top team? Will Şengün's game, will he get tacked on defense too much to be sort of a liability? Will he be able to, you know, be the first option for a playoff team? You know, these are all unanswered questions, and I think their defense is going to translate, but offensively, I could see it being a struggle for them, especially late in games, late in the series. And then you look at the Warriors, you've got Jimmy Butler with 119 playoff games played, Steph with 147, Draymond with 157. These guys have obviously been around the block. Steph and Draymond with 4 championships. Jimmy's been to multiple finals at this point as well. And so with all that, I'm going to pick the Warriors in 7. I expect this to be a very, very competitive series. I do not think it's going to be easy for either team. You know, I think people are starting to pick Houston a little bit more, but I do think the people picking the Warriors have been a little like, Rockets don't stand a chance. I do think they stand a chance. I think that it's going to be super competitive. I think it's going to play out similarly to that 2022 finals I mentioned, or even similarly to how the Kings-Warriors series from a couple years ago. Kings are a very different team from this Rockets team, but same vibe of like haven't been to the playoffs in a while. A lot of guys who, you know, don't have experience there. A young kind of fun up-and-coming team. who, you know, had home court in that series as well. So I think it'll play out like that, where it goes seven games and then Golden State wins game seven in Houston, just off the back of their experience, their ability to, you know, produce offensively in the half court in crunch time, where with Houston, I have to see it before I could buy into them being a legitimate threat on the offensive end in the postseason. And I think defense is really important, but if you can't score when it counts most in the postseason, it's really hard to win games, let alone win series. So I'm going with Warriors in seven, but I do expect it to be a back and forth fun series with both teams, you know, being super competitive across the board. Next, I will go to the Lakers and the Timberwolves, which this also should be, you know, one of the best series in my opinion. I think these teams are both really good. I think both of them, you know, have an argument to be made to not only win the series, but to go on to make the Western Conference Finals. We saw the Timberwolves in the Conference Finals just last season. We saw the Lakers in the Conference Finals just 2 years ago. And we saw Luka in not only in the Conference Finals, but in the Finals last year. So these teams and the players on these teams have had, you know, a good amount of success over the past few seasons in the postseason. And I think that it's going to be a really, really fun matchup. On the Wolves side of things, you know, they started 32-29, finished the year 17-4. They've won 8 of their last 9 games. In that span, they are a plus 11.2 net rating, which was 4th in the league. They're the 2nd best offense, 7th best defense. And, you know, that offense is very, you know, a contrast to where they've been in years past. Even last year when they made the conference finals, they were not one of the top offensive teams. I think they were below league average in offensive rating during the regular season. So, you know, it's good to see them kind of start to find a rhythm there a little bit more than they have in the past. But they've been, I mean, no way around it, one of the best teams in the league on the season. I think they're top 5 or 6 in net rating on the whole season as well. So I know that, you know, they find themselves as the 6th seed on the road in round one, but the West was so tight. They win one or two more games here or there, and suddenly they could have been the 3 seed. So, and then on the Lakers side, it's obviously it's hard to judge their whole season just because their team is drastically different from what it was before. But look, Luka has really started to find himself since the start of March. He's averaging 31-8-8 on 46% from the field, 42% from 3. So I know he got out to a little bit of a rough start shooting with LA, but has since been, you know, much improved and playing a lot more like his normal self. And his presence has really unlocked Austin Reeves. You know, since this trade, Reeves is averaging 23 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists on 48% from the field, 40% from 3, 91% from the line. So that's the thing, is the Lakers now have 3 players that are insanely deadly threats offensively with the ball in their hands as scorers and playmakers, which is what makes this Lakers team so unique. But it's going to be a lot of in this series of who style wins, because you know that Minnesota is going to want to ride Gobert, ride their defense, you know, play big, take advantage of the Lakers' size disadvantage. They have Jackson Hayes, who's starting at center, but he he's not great, and I'm not sure he is a playoff starting caliber center by any means, but he's really all they've got down there. But they are going to try to do these small ball lineups. You know, they're going to play these Rui Hachimura, Dorian Finney-Smith at the 4 and 5, and alongside LeBron, Luka, and Reeves. And so who wins this battle is probably who wins the series. You know, unfortunately for Minnesota, I feel like we've kind of seen this story before. It's going to be really hard for me to see a series with Luka Doncic and Rudy Gobert and think that Rudy Gobert is going to prevail. But I think Minnesota still has a chance. And I think a couple things. One is, you know, last year when they played them, they really didn't make Luka work defensively at all. We saw when Boston beat Dallas, the number one reason is because they were attacking Luka basically from the start of every single game and making him work defensively. Last year, Dallas just stuck Luka on Jaden McDaniels and they let them get away with it. He kind of just sat in the corner and was not involved in many of the actions offensively. He was not attacking Luka, you know, off the dribble or anything like that. And so not only did Luka kind of get to rest on the defensive end, but they weren't getting any advantages because Dallas had other good perimeter defenders that they were kind of having to live with going against them. And so Will they do the same? I think LA, you know, their defense has been here and there. You know, it went through a really, really good stretch during the middle part of the season, including when they got Luka, but it, you know, wasn't quite as good towards the very end of the season. And I think that they are going to struggle defensively at times in the postseason. Like, I have no doubts about that. I think that was the biggest question mark for people when they made the Luka trade, because they don't have that interior presence. But, you know, if they can pull Gobert out on that perimeter, then it's going to be really tough for Minnesota to continue to roll him out there, you know, especially in crunch time. And then I think Mike Conley is another guy who could potentially get really taken advantage defensively. Like, who do they put him on? You really can't. You obviously can't put him on Luka or LeBron. You kind of really can't put him on Austin Reeves at this point. You can try to put him on, like, Rui, for example, but I think Hachimura is really good at taking advantage of size advantages. So I think he'll be happy to live in the post and take him down. So it could be a tough series for some of the Timberwolves in terms of matchups with Gobert and Conley, which, you know, that severely limits them after that. And I think how they guard Ant is also going to be really important. Ant has led the league this year in terms of getting blitzed and doubled and people hedging on him. And so if LA tries to do that, then he's going to have to give the ball up and they're going to have to live with other guys taking shots. And so that's going to fall on Julius Randle to be effective. And I've talked about this a lot with Julius Randle, but he has been a truly dreadful playoff performance at this point. He's in his career shot 20% from three in the postseason, shot 39% from 2-point range in the postseason. He has more turnovers than assists. And so it just hasn't been an environment that he's been able to succeed in. And if he plays that badly again, I don't see how they could really win the series, because they're going to just be so Ant reliant. And the Lakers are probably just going to trap him and double him every time he gets the ball. And then if Randall's not beating them, who is? You know, is Jaden McDaniels or Dante DiVincenzo or Naz Reid going to be able to average 20 plus points a game? If not, then I think it's going to be really tough for them. But if Randle can even just play, you know, he doesn't need to play at his all NBA level that he's been in the past. If he can just play how he did during this regular season, I think that makes it really interesting all of a sudden. And I think that the Timberwolves have a really good chance. And so I think that Anthony Edwards is in the category of players where, like, I can't rule him out of any series, regardless of the matchup. I think he's that good. We've seen him be, you know, just take over in the postseason in the past. Last year, he was spectacular against Phoenix, spectacular against Denver. He struggled a little bit against Dallas, but I think that was just, you know, kind of a tough matchup for them defensively, as well as the fact that, you know, Towns really did not show up in that series. And a lot of the other guys just were kind of bothered with what the Mavericks were doing. But the problem for them is I think the Lakers can do a lot of those same things. I really do. I think that while they're not the biggest, they're thick, they're girthy, you know. A lot of their guys are on the bigger side for their position, and it's funny because they have this supposed size disadvantage, but the center spot's really the only place that will have that disadvantage. Like, they're big at every other position. So it's going to come down to that center spot. Can Gobert take advantage of that? And largely the answer to that question has been no. And so I'm going to ride with history and say that Gobert's not going to be able to, you know, overcome or take advantage of that. And I think Luka and LeBron and Reeves are going to be able to, you know, abuse him a little bit on that end. And so I just cannot in good faith pick Rudy Gobert team over a Luka Doncic team in the postseason. And so I'm going to go with Lakers in six, but I think this is going to be a really competitive series. I wouldn't be surprised if it went seven games. And, you know, if things break Minnesota's way, I'm not ruling them out of this. I just think that the Lakers have too much firepower, because even if they take out Luka a little bit, Reeves can cook. Even if they take Reeves out completely, they've got Luka and LeBron. So it's just going to be really tough. There's too many guys on the Lakers that can, you know, are going to have some sort of matchup advantage at any time they're on the court. And Minnesota, you know, they can't say the same. They're going to be really Ant reliant and just cross their fingers that Julius Randle shows up. Next series, we have the Nuggets and the Clippers. And this is, you know, one that's been very talked about. And I think for good reason. It should be a spectacular series. We've got two teams that are headed in quite different directions. But, you know, the Clippers, They finished the year 18-3. They've currently won 8 in a row. They haven't lost since March. And 2 of those 3 losses were to Cleveland and Oklahoma City, but you can't fault them for that. But they have the number one net rating in the NBA in that span at plus 13.3. They're first in offensive rating, fourth in defensive, which is crazy because if you remember back to earlier in the year, you know, they've been a top 5 defense all year long, but they really, really struggled offensively at times. And so for them to be the number one offense over that big of a sample, it just tells you the effect that Kawhi Leonard has had on this team since he's been back and healthy. And the Kawhi, James Harden, Norman Powell, Zubats foursome is a plus 15.4 when they're on the court together this year. That is the best foursome among non-Oklahoma City players. OKC's just been so good this year that it's hard to compare with any of their stats. But on the Nuggets side, they were 37-19 sitting at the 2 seed. They finished the year 13-13. So, you know, it's not like they were terrible, but they were very mediocre down the stretch. They have won their last 3 games, you know, since they fired Mike Malone. But there is a lot of question marks with Denver, and the Clippers are peaking at the right time. So I think the Clippers are kind of the trendy pick here, and I get it because Jamal Murray doesn't look fully healthy. And so the question is, if he's not fully healthy, can Denver survive? Because, you know, Murray, we know that he has elevated his game in the postseason consistently in this era of Nuggets basketball, but he has just not been reliable over the last year or so. You know, last year in the playoffs, they lost second round, and a lot of it is because he wasn't very good. You know, he only averaged 21 points a game on 40% from the field and 32% from 3 in the postseason last year. He's had 2 games played since he came back from injury. In those games, he's only 11 for 28 from the field. That's 39%, shooting 25% from 3. So, you know, he hasn't looked great. He should have, you know, a good amount of time to rest to hopefully get right for this, and I'm sure he will play. But they do not win the 2023 title without, you know, elite all-star, even maybe borderline all-NBA level Jamal Murray. And they haven't really had any success unless they've had that version of Murray in the postseason. So if they get a compromised version of him, which is very possible, then it puts Denver in a huge hole and a huge talent disadvantage because, you know, the rest of their roster is not very deep as is. They don't have a good bench. They don't have any answer for when Jokic is on the bench at all. They have to stagger him and Gordon because they don't even have a playable big man. But you play Aaron Gordon at the 5, you might have some serious disadvantages with Zubats, who's been one of the best post players in the NBA this season. He might even make all NBA. He's getting a lot of steam for that and deservingly so. And none of this is even to mention the Russell Westbrook factor, which, you know, since he came back from his injury, he's shooting only 41% from the field, 31% from 3, averaging nearly 4 turnovers a game for a guy who's, you know, not even one of the 2 or 3 primary ball handlers on this team. Last year in the postseason, he was dreadful. 6 points a game, 4 rebounds, under 2 assists, shot 26% from the field, 23.5% from 3. Like, he was just god-awful. And so you really can't rule out that he's going to put up that kind of stinker performance. And they need him because, look, you don't want to be playing in big minutes, but just given the lack of other options on this bench, like, if he's unplayable, who are they playing? Are they just going to play their starting 5 and then Peyton Watson in small minutes? I mean, they might throw Julian Strother out there, Jalen Pickett, but those guys have not been consistent. Those guys have not proven that they can survive in a postseason setting. And so Denver has a lot of question marks. You know, they haven't been good defensively for really most of this season, especially in the second half either. They have a now unproven coach. And so it's really going to come down to, can Jokic carry this team? But even with all that, you know, even with the fact that Harden is put up an all NBA level campaign, Norman Powell was in the all-star discussion, Zubats might make all NBA, Kawhi looks like top 5, top 10 player in the league right now. Even with all of that, I'm finding it really hard to trust that the Clippers can knock off Denver because they are relying on probably the 2 least reliable stars of this, you know, the past half decade. When you look at James Harden, in, you know, over his last 3 postseasons, in 29 games, he has shooting performances of 6 for 17, 3 for 9, 5 for 17, 4 for 11, 4 for 11 again, 8 for 21, 3 for 13, 4 for 18, 2 for 14, then followed that in the next game with a 3 for 14, 4 for 16, 3 for 11, 2 for 12, 5 for 16. That's 14 of his 29 games. So that is basically saying 50% of his games, he's just going to be awful offensively, not be able to make any shots and a total non-factor there. And so it's really hard for me to overlook that. Like, I know he's been awesome this year, but his shooting has already not been very good in the regular season. He was down in the 40-41% range for most of the year. His three-point shooting percentage is down this season. And am I really going to fall for this with James Harden again? Am I going to talk myself into saying, you know, well, he looked really good this year. I'm sure this could be the year in the postseason, because it hasn't ever been the year. And then you look at Kawhi. He hasn't made it through a playoffs fully healthy in 5 years. And he hasn't made it through a single series in 4 years. Just think about that. He has not made it through a single seven-game series healthy in 4 years. The full presidential term since he last made it through just a single series. Not even the whole playoffs, a single series. And so I know he's been so good. He's, I mean, 52, 44, 81 splits. He's been like looking like his old elite self defensively. Even like 2023, when he was healthy against the Suns in those first two games, he averaged 35 a game on 55%. Like, he looked like the best player on the court in the series with Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. But again, it's like, am I going to fall for it? Am I going to talk myself into Kawhi, this will be the year he's healthy. Harden, this will be the year that he, you know, plays up to his regular season standard. And when you look on the other side of the court and you've got a guy in Jokic who's the most reliable player probably in the world, it's really hard for me. I know all the factors point to, you know, Denver's supporting cast isn't very good. Jamal Murray's banged up. The Clippers are peaking at the right time. Kawhi Leonard's playing at a, you know, MVP level. But I think I'm going to be really, really angry with myself if I pick the Clippers and then Kawhi gets hurt or Harden puts a 5-for-18 stinker up in game 6 at home or something like that. And then if Jokic averages, you know, 35-12-12, I'm going to be like, of course he did. Of course he did. Why wouldn't he? You know, he's that good. And I really think that he is going to will them to this victory. And so with that, I am going to pick the Nuggets in 7 games. It's going to be a really fun series. I think that as long as Kawhi Leonard plays, I think the Clippers have a super legitimate chance to win this, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I just am banking on history, and history says he is going to get hurt at some point. History says that James Harden, in the biggest moment, is going to come up small. Even though I'm a Harden guy, I just can't get past it with those two. Maybe if they only had one of those risks, I could get past it. But with both of them kind of looming, and the fact that you've got Jokic, a guy who it's just not been smart to bet against in recent years. Even last year, they lose second round, but it took a blown 20-point lead in game 7 at home for them to lose that game. And so I just, I can't do it. As much as all the logic all says Clippers in this one, but I'm just going to follow what I've seen over the last half decade, and that would be that the Nuggets will win this series in 7 games. So that's where I'm going to go. So now I am going to move out east. And I'm going to start with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who will play either the Atlanta Hawks or the Miami Heat. And, you know, I think this is similar to the West, where it doesn't really matter who Cleveland ends up playing. Miami has just been a compromised version of what they've been over the last few years without Jimmy Butler on this team. You know, Tyler Herro has had a great season, but he has not shot the ball nearly as well in the second half of the year. Before January 23rd, he was shooting 49% from the field, 41% from three in 41 games. In the 36 games since then, he shot only 47% from the field and 33% from three. I know he, you know, went crazy in the play-in game, but I think Cleveland's going to offer a little bit more resistance than Chicago did if Miami is to advance. But that might be a tall task in itself, because Miami just really doesn't have a lot of half-court offense that they can rely on outside of just Hero, you know, doing his thing, playing Hero ball, if you will. And on the Atlanta side of things, you know, Trae Young is just the entirety of this offense at this point, because without Jalen Johnson, they've really struggled, especially offensively. You know, Dyson Daniels having a great year, but much more impactful on the defensive end. Okongwu had a nice breakout. You know, Reese Shea's come on in the second half, but they just don't have the shot creation to hang with a team like Cleveland and how, you know, offensively fire powered they've been this season. But I am going to pick Cavs in 5, regardless of who they play. I do think both of these teams could sneak a win out. And a lot of that's because, you know, I'm still slightly on the skeptical side with Cleveland in the postseason. You know, Darius Garland, he had a kind of a scary fall when he hit his head on the court against the Knicks back on February 21st. Before that fall, he was 22 points a game on 50% from the field, 43% from three. Since then, he's down to 18 a game on 41% from the field, 34% from three. So all year we talked about how, you know, Garland has really gotten back to being himself. And because last year he definitely looked like a compromised version of himself with that jaw injury. But in the second half, after that fall, he's kind of looked more like the last year version of himself, which, you know, he's still a good player, still can shot create with the best of them, still a good shooter overall, but not quite as efficient, not quite as dynamic offensively, a little bit more passive. And so if they get the not full strength version of Garland, then can they survive defensively with him out there without the offensive punch that he brings, at least not at the level we know he's capable of. And another thing with Cleveland, I'll just point out, you know, if you just look at the past two seasons and the points that they've scored in the postseason, and I know this was one of the best offensive teams in the league this season, you know, all year long, they were dominant on that end. But in 2023, in their five-game series against the Knicks, they scored 97 points, 107 points, 79 points, 93 points, 95 points. That's an average of 94 points per game. Then last year, they win a series against Orlando in round one, though they tried hard to lose it. They actually had a negative net rating in that series. But that series plus the Boston series, the points scored for them were 97, 96, 83, 89, 104, 96, 106, 95, 118, 93, 102, 98. That's an average of 98 points per game. So they are averaging 96.9 points per game over a two-year sample in the postseason. Obviously, you're not going to make much of a deep run if you can't even hit 100 points regularly in today's day and age. And in that span, they only hit 110 points one single time in 12 games. They had more games under 90 than they had over 110. And they only hit 105 times in 12 games. So Cleveland will win the series. I have no doubt about it. And it'll probably be a short series. As I said, I'm picking them in five, but I'm just calling out some red flags. You know, I'm so excited to watch a series because I'm excited to see Cleveland in a postseason setting. One, with some real expectations because they haven't really had that. And two, can they actually replicate what we've seen from them in the regular season? Because to this point, you know, they've been a shell of themselves in the postseason. And I think that they will be improved. And I think that, you know, I don't expect them to average 95 points if they play Atlanta, for example. But it's worth noting. And it's something I will be watching. I want to see them look like their dominant selves before I can really buy into them as like somewhat legitimate contenders. So we'll see. As I said, Cavs in five. But I will have my eye on this series just for how Cleveland looks and how it translates. But moving to the next series. Celtics versus Magic. This is the two versus the seven. And, you know, the Magic, they were not quite as good as everyone expected them to be this year. I know they had some serious injuries, but even for a while when their guys were fully healthy, they were not really playing up to the level people had thought they would. I think a lot of people had them as a dark horse, like top three seed, for example. But their offense, you know, just continues to be a real issue with the personnel that they have and the offensive sets that they run, whatever you want to blame it on. But they did finish the season strong, 10-3 in their last 13. They, you know, blew out Atlanta in the play-in game, so kudos to them there. But it's been some weird kind of, you know, on-off stuff with Paolo and Franz. Can they coexist? Who emerges as more of like the alpha on the team? You know, the eye test kind of says Paolo is like the guy, but all the advanced stats say that this team is much better when Franz is on the court and much worse when Paolo is on the court. This season, they were a minus 9.5 with just Paolo on the court and a plus 10.2 with just Franz on the court. And they were plus 3.8 with both on. So it's, you know, that those are pretty staggering numbers. But you just look at the playoffs last year, for example, Paolo averaged 27 a game on 46%, 40% from three. Franz was only 19 on 41%, 27% from three. He had a 1-for-15 game in game seven. But regardless, I just don't see how Orlando scores enough points in this series to even really be competitive. You know, they're 27th in half-court offense on the season. They're 25th in clutch offense on the season with a 103.2 offensive rating, which if you extrapolate that across the whole season, they'd be dead last in the NBA by a pretty wide margin. It is just, you know, too much Cole Anthony for my liking. KCP has not shot the ball well. Jalen Suggs, that loss is huge. And without him, they don't really have any guards I trust. I mean, Corey Joseph's been starting for them. As I said, Cole Anthony's a little too hot and cold to be, you know, a reliable postseason guy, in my opinion. And so I think the Celtics are going to cruise in this one. I think that they're going to sweep them, win in four. Wouldn't be shocked if Orlando got a game. But again, I just don't see how they score enough to be remain competitive, especially without Suggs. And I think a lot of the trouble they've given Boston over the last couple years is largely due in part to the fact that, you know, Suggs has been really effective as a defender for them guarding their guards, because they're actually 6-4 versus Boston in their last three seasons. But I will also call out, I am absolutely not a guy that's like, oh, well, they went 4-0 against them in the regular season. Like, I've been burned on that, and I'm not buying into any of it. You know, last year, Phoenix went 3-0 against Minnesota in the regular season. All three were blowouts, and then they got swept. You know, so it's just, there's no correlation with it at all. If you just look back historically, I can point out some other examples. It's just, it doesn't, there's no rhyme or reason to if it'll translate. The postseason is a totally different animal. So I don't buy into that. I just think Boston has too much. You know, they finished the year 19-3. They still win 61 games with a plus 9.4 net rating in a year where it felt like they weren't even really taking the regular season that seriously. I mean, Jaylen Brown played only 63 games. Drew played 62. Porzingis, 42. Horford, 60. Even Tatum, I mean, he played 72 games, but that's technically the lowest percentage of games he's played in a season in his career. He's played less, but it was in shortened seasons. And so with Boston, they got too much firepower. I know Jaylen Brown's got some weird knee injury stuff going on, potentially a right knee bone bruise that he's been getting like injections for and stuff. But I think he could not even play in this series and they'd still probably win in five or something like that. So Orlando just does not have the juice offensively. I really think that they need to make some or consider making some offensive personnel changes next year to bring in some actual, you know, help for Franz and Paolo. They just have too many guys that are not threats offensively, not only just to create, but also just to shoot the ball. I mean, even KCP, thought of good shooter, did not shoot it well this year for them. So I don't know if it's something in the water down there. But regardless, Orlando, they've met their match with a comparable defensive team, but much better offensive team. So give me Celtics in four in a sweep. Then up next, we have the Knicks and the Pistons in the 3-6 matchup. And, you know, this should be a fun series if you like, you know, dust ups. I think the Pistons are, regardless of who they were going to play, there was going to be some sort of scenario where they get in some altercation or someone gets ejected or technicals or something like that at the very least. I would not be surprised if that happened. But, you know, the Pistons, they're a lot more than just that. You know, they started the year 11-17. They went 31-15 over the next 46 games. They had the fourth best net rating in the whole league in that span, behind only Boston, Cleveland, OKC, which, you know, I feel like those teams were above everybody this year. They did finish the year 2-6, and they did go 0-4 against the Knicks. But as I called out, you know, I don't buy too much into the, well, they beat us in the regular season type scenario, because I've seen it come around and burn teams way too often. The Knicks, conversely, you know, they started 37-18. They finished the year 14-13. Brunson did miss a good chunk of those games, so I'm not putting much stock into that, to be honest. But obviously, it's very well documented that they didn't play super well against the top teams. They were only 15-23 versus a 500 or better teams, which was the worst of any top four seed in the league by far. They went 0-10 versus Boston, Cleveland, OKC, yada, yada, yada. We all know that. But, you know, the Pistons are not those teams. I will say that. And so I'm a little worried for the Pistons. I know there's been some, like, talk about, oh, could they, you know, be a little frisky? I'm not sure I see it, to be honest with you. I worry this is going to be one of those series where Cade is having to do so much that his efficiency really takes a hit, that he's turning the ball over a lot. And, you know, it probably won't be fair. He'll get judged as like a guy who didn't perform in the playoffs. But, you know, the stuff they're asking him to do is just not, it's not fair for his age and where he's at in his career. It's similar to Paolo Banchero, where, you know, he's inefficient a lot of the times, but you look at the types of shots he has to take when he gets tossed the ball late in the shot clock, the things he has to do as a creator because nobody else on that team can. It's not really fair to judge it at face value. And I think that could be a scenario that happens in this series where, you know, Cade maybe doesn't have, I'm sure he'll get his counting stats, but I could see it being an inefficient series for him, even with, you know, New York having their questions defensively. But I do think, you know, OG and Mikhail, that's a pretty tough combo to have to go against. I'm sure he's going to get guarded by at least one of them at all times. I'm sure they're going to try to do some put Cat in the pick and roll and get him switched on, which, you know, has proven to be successful in the past. But I'm sure, you know, I bet that Tibbs will probably have some sort of counter to that. At least I would hope so. Otherwise, that's going to be the demise of the Knicks probably in the next round. But I just don't think they have enough outside of Cade. You know, Tobias Harris has not been trustworthy in the playoffs for maybe his whole career, but definitely not at this point. Malik Beasley, he's had a tremendous season. He was my vote for sixth man of the year. I think, you know, he is just far exceeded expectations for anything they could have hoped for when they signed him. He has been just really a revelation off the bench and as a shooter for them, 1 3-pointer shy of making the most in the league this year with well over 300. But the reality is with Beasley, the playoffs have not been kind to him. You know, last year with the Bucks, his minutes were down 8 per game in the postseason. 2023 with the Lakers, he got cut to playing only 8 minutes per game. He was getting DMPs, coach's decision, like not even in the rotation. And then 2022, his minutes were also cut by 6 back when he was with Minnesota. So he's been consistently a guy that has kind of downgraded in the postseason. And that was as more of a complimentary guy. Now he's thrust into, you know, a lot of responsibility in this offense as a shooter and to stretch the floor and a guy who can even has to create a little bit. And so that's an even tougher role to be in the postseason. And I don't think that he's necessarily built for it. And then that leaves, you know, Dennis Schroeder's their second best creator outside of Cade, which also concerns me. So I, you know, the Pistons, they've really lived off their defense. That's what had them, you know, winning all those games when they did. And so I do think, you know, they might be able to bother the Knicks a little bit, but I just think the Knicks got too much firepower. I know that there's question marks with them as a contender, like last year with playing all those minutes. You know, are they too Brunson reliant, especially come postseason? Does Karl Anthony Towns at center even work defensively to try to actually contend in this league? You know, there are a lot of questions, but I just don't think that they're going to really come to fruition against the Pistons because I just think they have such a massive, massive talent advantage. I mean, if you look across the board, like if you were just drafting the 5 best players in the series, 4 of them would be Knicks. You know, Cade would be in there, but then it would be in some order, Brunson, Towns, Bridges, and Anunoby. And so that's really tough to overcome. That's really tough to overcome. And so I don't really see them being overly competitive in this. I don't even really see it being a series that goes 6 or 7 games. I'm going to pick the Knicks in 5 games. I think the Knicks still are very flawed as a team, but I think they got a nice draw against a very inexperienced team with not a lot of firepower that ultimately is kind of just happy to be there. And that's okay. That's okay. It doesn't take anything away from the season that the Pistons had. You know, this is, I mean, best case scenario for them in every facet. Like, even if they get swept, it's still like a resounding success of a season. So it's okay. You know, they were never supposed to be able to compete with a team like New York. So I have Knicks in 5. I do think Detroit will get 1 at some point, but yeah, I personally don't think that this series is going to be that exciting. And then lastly, we have definitely the best series in the Eastern Conference, the Pacers versus the Bucks. And this series was kind of a moving target to be able to pick because we did not know what was going to happen with Damian Lillard. I was very skeptical that he was really going to be able to come back at all. But it has been announced that not only like is he going to be back soon, but probably very soon. You know, he's been ruled out for game 1, but it sounds like they said he's ramping up and very in play that he could suit up for game 2 of this series. And I'll just say this. If he did not play, I think Milwaukee was absolutely cooked. They did not stand a chance in this series. I'm sure they could have won a couple games because of how dominant Giannis is and the type of season he's had and what we know he can do in a postseason setting. But they just they weren't going to have the shot creation. They weren't going to have the shot making. And in a half court setting, I think Milwaukee was going to be, you know, a little too easy to guard. We've seen Giannis without a sufficient supporting cast, and it's not always been super pretty in the postseason. But with Dame back, it definitely makes things interesting because, you know, the Bucks, they've had about as roller coaster of a year as you could think. They were 2-8 to start, then went 23-9 over their next span of games before finishing up with a 15-17 stretch and then winning 8 games in a row, all without Dame. So pinpointing, you know, what this team is really difficult. They've been, you know, better on defense than they were last year, for example, but not quite as good on offense. So it's a little head scratching in terms of the lack of, you know, chemistry between Dame and Giannis. I mean, it's not that it's bad chemistry, but it just hasn't really ever clicked in a way that you would have hoped when you pair two guys like that together. It's so dynamic and so unique and skills that in theory would complement one another. But, you know, it does feel a little bit more your turn, my turn sometimes. But the Pacers, on the other hand, they have been, and like no exaggeration, one of the best teams in the league for a really long time now. They started 10-15 since then. They finished 40-17 in the last 57 games of the season. I mean, that is a huge portion, well above 50% of the season where they were, you know, elite. Phil Jackson had his famous thing of that you're not a contender unless you win 40 games before you lose 20. Well, if they just reverse the order of their games, they did that. You know, they went 40-17. Having a stretch like that is really difficult to do. And the only teams better than them in that span are the aforementioned Boston, Cleveland, and Oklahoma City, who, you know, as I said, they've been better than basically everybody all year long. But that includes Haliburton missing 9 games in which they went 4-5 in those games. So they're 36-12 when he plays. Like, they're elite when he has played in the second half of the season. In that span, they're 6th in net rating, they're 7th in offense, and the biggest difference here is they're 7th in defense. You know, last year, they were 24th in defense for the whole season, and in the playoffs, they were 14th out of 16 teams in defensive rating with a 119, which is really not a good number. Again, 7th this year over the last 57 games with a 112 defensive rating. So they have, I mean, just drastically improved their effort on that end. I mean, the personnel is not really much different. They added Mathurin. He's not much of a stopper, and they actually like downgraded a backup center with Isaiah Jackson being out for the year and James Wiseman as well. So they're relying on Thomas Bryant, which, you know, that's a whole other issue. I'm a little worried for that those minutes, but I think they should shift and play small ball with Siakam at the 5 or Jairus Walker, and they very may well do that. So we will see. But the Pacers are to be taken seriously. And I mean, like, very seriously, because like I said, that's a really large sample. But, you know, you can never rule a team out with Giannis. And despite the Bucks' inconsistencies, you know, when you got Dame Lillard and Giannis in the series, you're always going to have a chance regardless of who you're playing. But there are questions about, you know, it's been a while since Giannis made it through a playoff series or, you know, carried a team to an extended run. You know, last year he didn't play a minute in the playoffs and they lost the Pacers. The year before, against the Heat, he gets hurt in game one, only plays 10 minutes, then misses game 2 and 3, comes back and is probably a little bit of a compromised version of himself in 4 and 5, and then they lose in 5 to Miami. Year before that, they make the second round. Giannis plays great, but without Middleton, they're not able to overcome Boston, and they're up 3-2 with a game 6 on their home court, and they blow that series. So it's really been since their championship run that they've had, like, a legitimate, impressive, deep, or any kind of playoff performance to be proud of, which is a long time. I mean, it's 3 years since Giannis has even made it healthy through playoffs, and 4 since we've seen them win more than just one first-round series against a bad team. And so these are real questions. And then the other question is, how much does Dame play? And I think that, you know, if he misses 2-3 games, I don't even think Milwaukee has that much of a chance. But if he's back by game 2, I mean, they're certainly in this thing. And so this is a really tough series for me to pick, you know, because on one hand, I'm a big proponent of, like, don't pick against the best player in a series unless the other team is overwhelmingly better, which I wouldn't say Indiana is overwhelmingly better than Milwaukee, even though they do have a far superior, like, supporting cast around their guys. But at the same time, I'm like, I it's really hard for me to deny like how effective Indiana has been recently. And it's all led by Haliburton, which, you know, in since the calendar turned 2025, his shooting splits are up to 51% from the field, 43% from three, averaging 20 and 10. Since the All-Star break, 21 and 11, 53% from the field, 44% from three. So, I mean, he's back to playing, you know, how he was around the play-in time last season when everyone was vaulting him up into, you know, like a, I mean, he was on pace to be like first team all NBA at that point, but he's been playing at that level legitimately. And it's the first time we've seen it over a long stretch in a year and a half, basically. And last year in the playoffs, you know, he was 19 and eight on 49%, 38% from three, not bad numbers, pretty solid. But I mean, if he continues to play how he's played right now, that's a huge boost from what they had last year. You know, he was good last year, but he was inconsistent. He had some games where he just was not aggressive shooting, didn't like was inefficient across the board at some points of different series. But if he's at a 50, 40, 90 level shooting with 20 and 10 numbers, then I think that that's kind of a game changer for them. And it's a aspect to their offense that they didn't have that in the playoffs last year. They were really, you know, by committee, and they got really good performances from role players. Just looking at some shooting percentages last year from some of their guys in the postseason, Nembhard had 56 from the field, 48% from three. Miles Turner, 52% from the field, 45% from three. McConnell was 49% from the field. Toppin was 54% from the field. Neesmith was really the only guy in their main rotation who didn't shoot the ball well, but he was also the main point of attack defender. So, you know, he was still contributing in other ways. And as a team last year in the postseason, they shot 51% from the field, 37% from three. That is pretty ridiculous for an entire roster. So can they replicate that? You know, they really only did make that run because of injuries. I do stand by that, but I don't want to take away from what they did, but they got lucky. It's okay. Teams get lucky. It happens. I say this all the time. Most teams that make deep runs had to get lucky in some way, but that's okay because that's just how it goes. You know, the playoffs in some ways are is just like a battle of attrition, and they won it for a couple rounds before they ran into Boston, who, you know, was just too good for them to handle. So this series, I've gone back and forth on it. You know, I was very heavily leaning Indiana before the Dame news, but with that back out, you know, it has had me rethink it a little bit. But I think I am going to go with Indiana still. And the reason why is because I just trust their consistency more. I think that they're better coached. I think they have a better supporting cast. I think they have more of an identity than Milwaukee does. I think their guys, you know, that they everybody knows their role. And you're not relying on guys like Kyle Kuzma and Kevin Porter Jr. You know, KPJ has shot the ball well, but he's not a guy I trust in a postseason setting. Kuzma, they have a negative net rating with him on the court since he got there. They've been better with him not out there. And so I like Indiana's formula. I think Halliburton's playing some of the best basketball of his career. Siakam has had a really good year. I really like their role players. Like I said, they're well coached. And I just cannot deny 40 and 17 is legit, man. That's legit. And that is too big of a sample for me to, you know, look away when you've got the Bucks, who are like have a terrible 15 game stretch, then a good 25 game stretch, then a terrible 30 game stretch, and then a good 10 game stretch. You know, they've been all over the place this year. And so I'm going to trust the consistency that Indiana's had. They also, you know, last year's experience was really good for them. A lot of times you see these really good regular season teams. Like, obviously, I picked against Houston, I'm doubting them. I picked against Detroit, I'm doubting them. And you could argue, well, what's different about Indiana? Well, they've been there. You know, I think one, they've got more star power. I think Halliburton's better than anybody on either of those two teams. And I think Siakam's a much better number two than either of those two teams have. But aside from that, I mean, they've made a conference finals. They know what it takes to get there. Even if they did get some luck, that experience still stays with you. And they've taken some of their losses. You know, they get swept in the conference finals. They had some injuries of their own with Halliburton going down. So they've gone through some of the growing pains. So I think that they also have home court advantage, so that should help in like a potential game seven scenario or something like that. So I'm going to go with Pacers in seven. I think it'll be a very fun, competitive series. But I think, you know, there's just too many doubts and question marks I have about Milwaukee, and I think I have more answers with Indiana in that case. So I'm not going to do full you know, round by round predictions for this podcast. I'll save those for when we get to each round, but I am going to tell you my finals picks, and I am going to go with the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference and the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference. And to me, these are the best teams that have been the best teams all year long. I know Cleveland has, you know, given Boston a run for their money, but I've kind of talked about some of my doubts with them just with it's more conceptual in the postseason to this point. And I want to see them, you know, look the part before I feel confident picking them to make the finals, for example. Whereas with Boston, I know exactly what I'm getting. I know exactly what I'm getting. And I think that they are probably more talented than Cleveland. They have much more experience than Cleveland. And I think they're better on both ends. You know, I think Cleveland's really good offensively, but Boston can match that. But then Boston is a level up from them defensively. And there's just less question marks. You know, I just trust Boston more. And we saw them win a championship last year. And it's the same group. And they look as good on paper. And I test, even though it seems like they haven't even taken this regular season as seriously as they did a year ago. So I'm going to pick Boston to make the finals in the East. And then in the West, I think it's OKC's to lose. You know, I think picking ranking 2 through 6 or something like that in the West is incredibly hard. Incredibly hard. I couldn't tell you who I thought the second best team was or third best. You know, I think any of those teams could beat like any of them. And there's a lot of question marks with all of them. They're all are super talented. I think there'd be a lot of like rock, paper, scissors, the cyclical, you know, where it's like everyone's got their kryptonite and it's a different team. But the one constant is Oklahoma City. They've been so dominant all year long. To me, they are just the resounding favorites in the West. And I think the better question is the field or OKC. And in that case, I would still take OKC because I think they're that good. They check every box. They're elite, elite, elite defensively. They're really good offensively too. They have an MVP level superstar, a guy that I think should win the MVP this season. Their really only question that I have for them is, you know, can Jalen Williams and Chet be the reliable second and third options behind Shea? But, you know, I think they're so good defensively and Shea can be so good that they don't necessarily need somebody who's like I'm going to get 25 every night or 23 every night as a second option. They really just need a by committee. You know, one of those guys has to have it going and then they need to get a little bit from the role players. And I really think that's going to be enough in the West. So I've got OKC making the finals and I picked them to win the championship preseason. And I'm going to stick with that pick. I think that they have earned the right to be the favorite. I think that, you know, they match up pretty well with Boston. I mean, a lot of the things Boston does well, OKC also does well. And a lot of the things Boston wants to do, OKC is, you know, poised to kind of make life difficult on them. They can play five out just like Boston can. They can play two bigs just like Boston can. They've got long, rangy defenders just like Boston does. They maybe don't shoot the ball as well as Boston, but I think their defense is even a level up slightly from what the Celtics have. So, you know, I think that they both, I mean, it would be a tremendous series. And I think that's a series most people want to see. And I think it's probably the one that's going to happen. Of course, you can never rule out other teams. Like last year, everyone thought it was going to be Celtics Nuggets and the Nuggets, you know, got beat second round. So you can't rule that stuff out. I think if the East was a little stronger, I might like think twice about Boston, but overall, it's just going to be really tough for anybody in the Eastern Conference to beat Boston 4 to 7 times. I just think that they've got by far the best team in basically every capacity. So with that said, yeah, I got Thunder winning the finals over the Celtics in 6 games. And yeah, that's my pick. And I'm going to stick with it until I can't anymore. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. We've got the playoffs kicking off tomorrow. The last play-in games are tonight. Very excited just to have the playoffs get started. You know, we got 4 game ones tomorrow. It just doesn't get any better than that. And we're going to have some really, really fun basketball over the next few weeks. And I'm very much looking forward to it. I probably will do a mid-series check-in on all the series in the first round, and then I'll do another one when they all wrap up, as well as, you know, second round previews and things like that. But obviously we'll see how the schedule plays out with how many games and how long these series are. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.